This is Andrew Kate.
And this is Ryan Capuano.
And welcome to another edition of the Death of Cinema podcast. In today's episode, Julianne Moore and her robotic dogs take on the Kingsman in Kingsman, The Golden Circle, while Jake Gyllenhaal joins the cast of Good Will Hunting for David Gordon Green's Stronger.
Well, buddy, it's the end of September, but it's still 85 degrees out and we're still seeing way too long action movies. Kingsman, Golden Circle, I didn't see the first one, but I have to admit that given my very, very low expectations and those terrible trailers that they released earlier this year, I actually found myself enjoying it a lot more than I did, than I expected to, rather. So the whole premise of this one is that Julianne Moore is some kind of drug czar who's hauled away on this in the jungle in an undisclosed location, for the to be spoiler-averse, and she wants to basically poison the entire world's recreational drug supply in hopes of getting it all legalized within the United States, I think, or some kind of vague something or other. So first of all, my biggest complaint is that it's really hard to want a villain to fail when you actually agree with what she's trying to accomplish, even if it is for personal reasons. Nevertheless, this is a very, you know, frenetic action movie. You know, right from the word go, it's just completely ballistic. The action scenes make absolutely no sense. A lot of them are actually shot in, you know, that fancy, it's made to look like one take, but you can very clearly see where the edits are. I really don't have a hell of a lot to say about this. I mean, there's some really campy fun in there with, you know, a cameo from Elton John that is just, you can tell he's having a total blast in that. And honestly, so is the rest of the cast. I can't really begrudge them for taking this movie, but a lot of it just makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. There's this weird subplot with the President of the United States and his vice president that really felt like it was from a completely different fucking movie. Overall, I just, maybe it was just, the bar was set so low for me to begin with that I came away more entertained than I expected.
Well, I'll speak that obviously I didn't see the first Kingsman ever, so just keep in mind that we sort of have to judge our thoughts based with that in mind. But I have to admit that I don't know if I enjoyed much of this movie at all. I didn't like it in any sense, and I think I have pretty good reasons for that. You know, I was immediately taken out of the movie during the opening sequence. And the reason for that is because of the artificial nature of the film. Like, you know, most movies, you know, in a blockbuster movies, I can accept that, you know, there's going to be lots of special effects and lots of crazy stuff. But from the first scene, from the get-go, I felt personally completely taken out of the movie because it looked so fake and artificial in that opening scene where Taron Egerton's, like, hanging on, like, the car and stuff. And it just looked to me, at least, maybe I was just in one of these moods where I was just specifically keyed into the special effects, but it really just completely from the get-go took me out of it. And you mentioned that sort of, like, there's a lot of things in this movie that seem just sort of thrown in there. I feel like that's this entire movie. This entire movie, to me personally, feels like every bad idea a director had just thrown at the screen and expecting us to be entertained by it. And obviously you were to an extent, and I'm not judging you in any sense of that. And I've certainly enjoyed a lot of movies and I really shouldn't have. But for me, just because I was taken out of it immediately, I just never got invested in any of it. Like, and in fact, the cast has nothing to do with my lack of enjoyment. I think the cast is fine across the board. I mean, I don't know what the hell Bruce Greenwood was doing as that evil president. It was pretty over the top, but obviously that was sort of what the performance called for. But for me, I just didn't care, like, about anything because of the artificial nature of the scenes. They're so ridiculous that I didn't get any enjoyment out of it because I felt so removed from it. It felt like these were scenes from another world that I had never sort of experienced before. And I'm perfectly fine with visual effects and special effects used. And, I mean, obviously most of the blockbusters nowadays use them to great purpose. But for me personally, this film didn't. And I feel like a lot of that not only falls on the shoulders of Matthew Vaughn, the director, but I also have to mention that obviously this film is adapted from a series of graphic novels, comic books written by the very infamous Mark Millar. Any of you who know Mark Millar, he wrote Kick-Ass or whatever, which I actually found some enjoyment in, and Matthew Vaughn adapted that for the big screen. And this is another one of his adaptations. And I feel like I can't put it all on Matthew Vaughn because I feel like a lot of these ridiculous ideas that make, like, the robotic dogs, like, obviously we joked about it in the intro, but for me, like, it was just too much. watch. It was like all this stuff being thrown on the screen. It's like, why am I supposed to care about all this ridiculousness just being tossed at me like it's a 5-year-old kid tossing these things? Also, one of my biggest issues with the film was the humor. I felt there was way too much low-rent humor. They really focused, oh, people are swearing. That's supposed to be funny. Like, I don't know. To me, it felt like that. It felt like this movie, and I feel like that's the problem with a lot of Matthew Vaughn's stuff, where there's always, even if the movie overall is good, there's always a few scenes in there where it's just like, what the hell is this? Why is this in the movie? You have a terrible sense of humor. Why you make me sit through this? That, to me, you know, and I've enjoyed a lot of Matthew Vaughn's projects in the past, from Stardust to X-Men First Class, although even in X-Men's First Class case, I feel like there's a couple scenes in that movie that are just like, if you remove them, the movie would be much better because of it, and it feels like Matthew Vaughn just sort of indulging his flourishes. But that's basically what I feel like this 2.5 movie is: Matthew Vaughn indulging his, you know, ridiculous stylistic flourishes, and obviously getting bad ideas from Mark Millar.
Yeah, it also serves worth a mention that the original cut of the film was reportedly 80 minutes longer than what actually made it to the screen. Oh, and if you could see the look on Andrew's face right now, it's something. There is a really low rent James Bond on ecstasy feel to this whole thing, and Matthew Vaughn kind of has this idea that, like, there's a scene that takes place at Glastonbury, for instance, and he has this idea of like trying to I don't know if it's he wants to modernize it for a younger audience, or, you know, he wants to prove that he's almost like a cool dad having all these drugs and whatever the fuck in the movie. But it really, a lot of it feels forced, and a lot of it is just, you know, I gotta give credit where credit's due, though, because I really did appreciate the few scenes that Channing Tatum was actually in and what he tried to milk out of it. There is, you know, the whole idea is that, you know, people are being poisoned with this bad drug supply. And there's one scene where, one stage of, and that was another thing that I actually had issue with, was that it has like four very specific stages of what this drug causes. So it creates like this ticking clock dilemma that kind of fuels the last 30 minutes of the film. But there's one scene where, you know, all the people who are infected are like kind of breaking out in spontaneous dance. And I think Channing Tatum, just with his goofy persona, really tapping into that, worked really well. I really admire the way the cast actually kind of went full bore with this, though. I mean, this is clearly not material that deserves that much attention. And I don't know if it was just because they were having that much fun, or they really, I know this is kind of like new ground for a lot of these individuals. But yeah, overall, I mean, the CGI is pretty bad. I think that's routine over, I'd say, 75% of special effects driven movies, is that the special effects are usually pretty bad and look really, really artificial. And I think a lot of this film actually borders on sci-fi, just because of how bizarre the concept it gets. And like I said, Elton John was really the highlight for me in that. And there are callbacks to you know, his early work as Captain Fantastic, and he comes out in like the giant peacock outfit towards the end of the film. And I will say that Julianne Moore really added a healthy dose of camp to it that appealed to me. But yeah, I can see why you were kind of bored to tears with this, because a lot of it, there's like this hokey, you know, the romance plot that gets tacked on. There's another love subplot in there with this girl that he has to seduce at Glastonbury, which was honestly one of the most uncomfortable things I've ever seen on camera. And Andrew is shaking his head, and he knows goddamn well what I'm talking about. And I will avoid any spoilers in this. I don't know if it was just because it caught me in a good mood, but maybe on a worse day, I probably would have been a little bit harsher on this. But and honestly, for I'd say like the first 15, 20 minutes, I was just kind of like shaking my head and saying, what the hell is this? But somehow it won me over. And maybe it was just because there was such an emphasis on hard liquor in the film that it also made me want to have a drink. But beyond that, it's good for a drunken Saturday afternoon HBO session, and when you're waiting around for something more interesting to do at night.
Yeah, I mean, just briefly sort of wrapping up my thoughts. I mean, I just felt like, you know, the actors were fine in the roles, but I thought most of them were wasted. Like, Channing Tatum was good in, like, the scene or two he was in until he gets, you know, without spoiling anything, you know, until he disappears from the film for a long period of time. Jeff Bridges is just barely in the film. Like, it feels like they just took these name-brand actors and put them in there. Julianne Moore obviously is sort of playing up that camp and having a bit of fun with it, but it was hard for me to buy into just because of how ridiculous Alice. It was like she's Elton John, robotic dogs, like this weird, you know, lair that she has. I don't know. It was just like so weird that I like, and don't get me wrong, I love weirdness in movies, but when a movie is just throwing, like, has these all these weird different things that don't seem to gel, wouldn't seem to gel in a natural, you know, sort of regular, regular toned movie or whatever. In this movie, it's just like all this stuff is just sort of piled on top of each other. And honestly, as sort of as you even mentioned, I was really bored for long stretches of this film. I think it's way, way too long. And the fact that you said it was nearly 80 minutes longer almost made me jump jump out of your apartment after hearing that. But I mean, I just, you know, I mean, maybe I would have it. I would have had a different experience for it maybe if I was in a better mood or if I'd seen the first one. But for me, I just can't really recommend the film. I'm slightly intrigued by Taron Egerton as a screen presence. I think he has something to it. And I feel like there's better projects ahead of ahead of him in his career or whatever. But for me, I can't really recommend this movie. I enjoyed Elton John definitely the most, definitely the best aspect of the film for me because, you know, it was ridiculous, but it was, someone I have an attachment to in real life as opposed to all the artificiality thrown at it. So I feel like, Matthew Vaughn has actually gotten a well-deserved backlash in recent years because although I've enjoyed a lot of his previous work, in fact, I mean, Stardust, I think, was a really enjoyable movie, a fantasy movie that's completely different from sort of the other movies he's made since. And I feel like if I rewatched Kick-Ass now, I probably wouldn't like it as I did originally. But I don't know. It's just something about the way he tells stories and sort of throws stuff at the screen that doesn't really work for me. It does work in different settings, but for me, it didn't work here at all.
Yeah, I gotta wonder what he finds so fascinating about Mark Millar in the first place. I don't know if it's just because maybe he's just distracted by these shiny new objects of these really bizarre set pieces that he puts forward. But I actually received the Kick-Ass graphic novel as a gift for my birthday back in whatever year the movie came out, 2010, I think. There's a really like odd, like extreme right-wing subtext to it all. Actually, it's not even subtext. It's pretty overt in the way they do it. And, you know, Matthew Vaughn doesn't really get into the politics of it. But beyond, I just don't understand what is interesting about this other than him being a kid in a candy store and getting to put all this manic energy onto screen. And I don't think this is necessarily manic energy that needs to be on screen. I did see both Kick-Ass films. I saw the second one against my better judge. Oh, don't go out of your way. They're both pretty horrendous, save for, you know, Jim Carrey having one or two good lines. I quite liked the X-Men First Class, but, as you said, there was a lot they could have cut from that. But, overall, The Kingsman, I don't know. Watch it if you want. I don't give a shit.
And with that in mind, we'll turn our attention to the news, as apparently James Cameron's many Avatar sequels have received release dates. Yippee, I'm so thrilled to watch all these James Cameron sequels. I'm sure they'll be of the highest quality possible.
Four of them.
Oh, geez. Whatever. But with that in mind, we're just going to transition to our second film, Stronger, a film directed by David Gordon Green. And I have to say, I was really unexpectedly emotionally affected by this film throughout, and I'm man enough to admit that I cried multiple times throughout this movie, and I think it's a credit to the filmmaking. I think the acting is particularly the strength of this film, particularly from Jake Gyllenhaal and Tatiana Maslany playing sort of the central couple. As I said, it was a really emotional experience, and I think it's because the film utilizes these very distinct techniques in terms of its cinematography that really makes you feel like you're a part of these characters' worlds and you feel intimate with them. There's a lot of use of close-ups and a lot of use of shallow focus where, you know, you're just, you know, you there's only one part of the screen in focus and you're focused on these actors. And I feel like, you know, typically, you know, in these films, you know, when you use close-ups and shallow focus like that, because of the way it's used in this film, I felt much closer to the characters, and I felt that really elevated what I think was a pretty sort of simple like script and simple story. I think the direction, the cinematography, and the acting really elevated all these elements to create a really emotional experience in general.
Yeah, I was a very big fan of this, and I mean, David Gordon Green is really the definition of hit or miss in terms of his filmography, but when he hits, I think, you know, George Washington, Snow Angels, even Pineapple Express are all great films, and I think you can probably chalk this one up in the latter category. And, you know, to what you said, I was very much affected by this, too, and I kept on having flashbacks to Paul Greengrass's United 93, which obviously is another tragedy in American history, but I was kind of what struck me about this. Obviously, you know, we're Providence folks, so we're not too far from Boston, first of all. So, you know, we both know people who live in the area, so it hits a little bit closer to home to see these images portrayed again, especially since it's so fresh. But I also, you know, we were teenagers when 9/11 happened, and I think as we've grown up and we get more of a context of real life violence and what that actually entails, that tends to make certain things hit a little bit closer to home on a human level. And I think that's where this film is really effective. You mentioned the shallow focus technique, you know, the scene where Jake Gyllenhaal is getting the bandages pulled off of his wounds and everything, and you're just forced to sit there with his agony. It's agonizing to watch. But this is a very, very good film. And it made me very, very emotional as well. And I think that it's very tastefully done. There's nothing that's, you know, tragedy porn or anything. Even when they do a flashback to the marathon tragedy itself, it's really effective work, and I think each moment is earned.
Well, it's interesting you bring up tragedy porn, because I'm using this film as sort of a counterpoint to a film I saw earlier this year, Peter Berg's Patriot's Day, a film that I didn't like in any sense. I know a lot of people did, and I think the problem with that film for me was because there was no sort of emotion to it or whatever. Like, you didn't feel invested. It wasn't actually sort of about something. It was about the events of this tragedy and how they played out, whereas this film takes a much more personal tact with the Boston Marathon bombing, whereas focusing on this one character and experiencing the aftermath of that. And obviously we get, you know, we don't see much of sort of the explosion and stuff like that, but it's sort of, you know, we see it all sort of from sort of Jeff Bauman's sort of point of view, and I think it's really effective for that, you know. And it's not just, you know, oh, it's about this tragic event, and it's not showing, you know, how it affects, you know, it really focuses in. And I feel like that's the important tack to go with in most of these tragic stories, where you want to make it personal and relatable to the audience without making it feel, you know, just ridiculous and just throwing things at the screen, which is sort of how I felt about some of the aspects of Patriot's Day, whereas this film is just really intimate. And like, that's the word I keep coming back to, because it's been a while since I had a film like this that really made me feel like a part of these characters' worlds, and like I was experiencing it as they were. I also want to give a shout out to, I didn't write her name down, so forgive me, but the actress who plays Jeff Bauman's mother in the film, because I don't know if she's a professional actress, but it's a credit to her acting that she felt like a real person. And I feel like that's a credit to a lot of the supporting cast of this film, where they feel like real people from Boston or whatever that you would see and experience, and they talk that way with flaws and all. And that's another aspect of this film that I really love, is that it doesn't sugarcoat things. It shows Jeff Bauman's flaws up front, and I know a lot of people have sort of mentioned that as a talking point for this film, and I think it really works. Whereas a lot of these films, you know, they just, you know, they want to shy away from the darker aspects. I loved how this film didn't shy away from that, and I know Jeff Bauman's actually going around doing interviews about the film, and he was perfectly fine with that or whatever, because obviously he wrote some of that stuff in his book. And I think it's a credit to him that he's willing to sort of show this very even portrayal of himself as a very flawed human being. And I think that's the power of this film. It's not just showing this, oh, he's this great hero or whatever. It's showing really, you know, how this experience affected him and sort of, you know, the type of person he is, very layered with flaws like most of us.
Yeah, I think what's most affecting is that, well, first of all, I feel like every conversation that Jeff Bauman has between his friends, I've heard, you know, in the bathroom at the House of Blues multiple times. I can't really put myself into, you know, a guy who's not really any different than you or me, and to all of a sudden have to become this national symbol of heroism, into, you know, all the survivor's guilt and the PTSD that goes along with that. I think they do a very nuanced job with that. And, you know, obviously there's the scene where he's waving the flag at the Stanley Cup game, throwing out the first pitch at Fenway and everything. It's very effective. And then honestly, that first pitch scene is probably the most affecting thing. And when Pedro walks out, it's just, oh God, it kills you. And I think the real strength of the film, like you said, is just in the character work and making this feel just palpable. Like it's not just like this grand hagiography. It's not some bullshit police procedural. If anything, I think it's disrespectful to do something along those lines. I think especially when it's so recently removed. It's not, I mean, this only happened 4.5 years ago roughly, and it's still very fresh. I mean, we weren't even allowed in the state of Massachusetts. My wife works in North Attleboro, Massachusetts, or worked there at the time, and she wasn't even allowed in the state. It's just really, it's still, the wounds are still fresh in my mind, and I think it's really telling that they pulled together such a beautiful human story, and I think they really kind of sold what, you know, despite Jeff Bauman's reservations about becoming this hero, or this heroic image, as it were, and it really, you know, what it means to people and how he eventually comes to grips with that is really just beautiful. And yeah, I mean, it's a very basic three-act structure screenplay, but it is elevated, and I'd say most of the credit goes to David Gordon Green, but I think Jake Gyllenhaal is finally going to get back to the dance for his lead performance here.
Oh, we can only hope. Obviously, we're both big fans of Jake Gyllenhaal. Definitely, easily one of the best actors of working right now. He just has done such varied work. And I also, you know, just obviously want to shout out to Tatiana Maslany, who I think has been very underutilized as an actress in general in the film world. Obviously, she sort of had her big breakthrough in Orphan Black, playing sort of multiple roles. And it's a show that I've really been on my list forever that I really want to check out. But in this, I think she really, you know, I don't know. It's a tough role to play. And a lot of times these types of roles, the girlfriend role in these films, can feel a bit underserved. But I think just the way she plays it is very intensely powerful in the way it's visually shot. And I also wanted to give a shout out not only to David Gordon Green, but obviously the cinematographer, Sean Bobbitt, who I wasn't aware did the cinematography for this going in. But I was very pleased to find that out, as he's definitely sort of one of my favorite cinematographers working. And all the work he does is very effective.
And I think that's going to do it for this particular episode of the Death of Cinema podcast. Next week, we will be turning to the team behind Little Miss Sunshine and their take on the infamous tennis match between Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs in Battle of the Sexes, and what is hopefully a great Tom Cruise performance that we've been hoping for a few years now in Doug Liman's American Made.
We'll see you guys next week.